Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Bagg.
And I'm Aaron Schrenk. Today on the program, we'll take you to the daddy of them all, Cheyenne Frontier Days, for a number of stories, including the challenges of being a professional bullfighter.
You get in front of enough bulls, you're going to get run over. And if you're not prepared to get run over, then you're in the wrong profession.
We will also learn what rodeo can be like for those who are gay and lesbian. And we will learn that some of the fiercest competitors at Cheyenne Frontier Days are not to be found in the rodeo arena.
If you see a family walk up, if you see a group of people, who's the alpha? Who's the one you need to approach to get the group to play the game?
We'll talk to the director of a group who's trying to get medical marijuana on the ballot, and we'll hear from our Inside Energy team.
Those stories and more coming up on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News.
Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Aaron Schrenk.
And I'm Bob Beck. Cheyenne Frontier Days has been Wyoming's biggest party for nearly 120 years. The 10-day rodeo, an all-around celebration of cowboy culture, welcomes visitors from across the country and world every summer. Frontier Days and professional rodeo help keep the tradition of the Old West alive and kicking. But for many gay and lesbian people, the rodeo tradition is one of intolerance and exclusion. Wyoming Public Radio's Aaron Schrenk reports.
Ryan Reed loves rodeo, and each July, he makes a pilgrimage here to the so-called daddy of them all in Cheyenne.
You just feel like you're on hollow ground when you're here.
Roaming the Frontier Days midway, this amateur steer wrestler and calf roper is like a kid in a candy store.
Yesterday, during the bareback bronc, I actually got some dirt flung on me, and I really felt like I'd been hit by some special dirt or something. And that's just kind of the feeling I have about the place.
Reed sports a cowboy hat and handlebar mustache. He looks like he belongs at the rodeo, but he hasn't always felt that way, even though the sport was part of his childhood.
I was around it, but to some degree felt probably excluded from it. As a young, gay, closeted kid on the farm, you can kind of be afraid of your own shadow. And so I think I probably just felt like maybe it wasn't for me.
Reed works with the International Gay Rodeo Association. It's an amateur rodeo circuit with 20 local chapters that puts on about a dozen rodeos every year. Anyone can compete, but these rodeos are meant to be places where gay and lesbian cowboys and cowgirls who haven't felt welcome at traditional rodeos can be themselves.
Being openly gay and being involved in traditional rodeo, these two things clash and are unworkable. There is a whole lifestyle and set of traditions around rodeo. It's probably one of the things we all love about it. But for some folks, part of that tradition is exclusionary of gays and lesbians and trans people.
At Frontier Days, Reed says this can be subtle. Take the kiss cam, for example, something you see at a lot of pro sports events.
And of course, it's always a man and woman, and if they go for two men, it's a joke. Ha ha, isn't that funny? Two guys, ha ha. Putting forth the notion that the only people here are straight people. And I know that's not the case. My partner and I are here together today, so probably be a little while before my partner and I end up on the kiss cam, but I did tell him today, hey, if they do it, I'm kissing you.
The thing is, gay men and women are a part of this traditional rodeo culture, just not always openly. Like a man I'll call Wayne, who's been volunteering behind the scenes at Cheyenne Frontier Days for decades.
Well, Frontier Days and rodeo are an old traditional family values type of an event.
The reason I'm calling him Wayne instead of using his real name, and the reason he sounds like someone demanding a ransom instead of how he really sounds, is because working the rodeo means a lot to him, and he's afraid that if everybody here learns he's gay, he might not be able to do it anymore.
I don't know what the implications would be, but, you know, they could take me off the committee, or they could assign me no duties, or whatever. I don't know. It's up in the air.
Wayne grew up in the cowboy state and has always been a rodeo fan, but because of the so-called traditional family values he feels are such a part of this world, Wayne hides his own family life from some fellow volunteers.
Like I said, you know, some people know, some don't, so I just don't broadcast.
Wayne says there are many gay people involved in rodeo in one way or another, but as long as the culture remains exclusive, it's a missed opportunity.
Not only do you have the participants and the producers and whatever, but there are a lot of fans out there, and a lot of them are gay.
It was only through the gay rodeo circuit that Ryan Reed was able to get into the sport. Today, he's visiting a statue of Lane Frost on the rodeo grounds, paying respects to the legendary bull rider who died here in Cheyenne in 1989.
What I love about this is you can see it moving. The statue, I mean, is just so well done. The artist that sets the sculpture did such an amazing job.
Yeah, wow.
You think it's gonna move right in front of your eyes. We just think of Lane Frost as someone who loved rodeo as much or more than anybody else, and he gave it his all.
There are no openly gay competitors in pro rodeo, but Reed points out that's the reality for most sports, thanks to stereotypes about the athletic ability of gay men and concerns about fan backlash. The tide is shifting, though. Teams like the Los Angeles Dodgers are hosting LGBT nights. But that's LA and baseball. This is Wyoming and rodeo. Reed's not holding his breath.
Would I love it if traditional rodeo became more open to LGBT people like other pro sports have? Yes, I would love to see that. Do they think we're going to do that? No, probably not, except for the fact that maybe we'll change people's minds about whether gay people can rodeo or not. It turns out we can.
Gay rodeos across the country show that all sorts of people are drawn to the cowboy tradition. But if exclusion is the norm in mainstream rodeo culture, perhaps that's one tradition that's worth bucking. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Aaron Schrank.
The rodeo may be the best-known competition at Cheyenne Frontier Days, but outside the arena, there is another group of skilled professionals vying for glory. Carnival Games operators leverage years of practice and skill to convince people just like you to pay cash for the opportunity to win a plush, stuffed prize. For many of them, it's not just a job, it's a way of life. Wyoming Public Radio's Miles Bryan spent time with a few of these games operators and has this postcard.
My name is Andre Evans, and I'm a games operator. I work for Terry Charleston Concessions, and this game is one ball. Say, Dad, bring that hero over here and let him win mine one. Let me just show it to you. See, when you win over here, you don't get no little weenie prize. This is where the big dogs sit. Are you ready? You see a group of people, who's the alpha? Let's say if I see a mom and a dad and two teenagers. So dad, because of his male ego, he ordinarily, a lot of them don't want to look bad in front of the family. So he'll be more resistant to playing. So what I'll do is I'll ask dad to bring the kids over, let them be a hero and win mom one. Hey, watch it. Watch this dude right here. Here he goes. Ah! Oh, he got nervous. See, that's what a pretty girl would make you do. The arm would start going crazy. There's a code that goes with this way of living, the Carney Code. This is something that's come down through the centuries. And it offers an opportunity for people who don't fit in other walks of life. They're a little bit too outgoing. They're more extroverted. They're more adventurous. I have the freedom to be me.
All right, you guys ready? Sound the bell, here comes your water, guys. Shoot him. Hey, shoot him off the tees, the top, guys. Don't miss the drop. He's going to win it. Don't look up, Twitter. That's why you're losing.
We read people. You know, like, we can pretty much pick up your personality, and then we'll play on that and use that to have an idea of how to come at you. Craig McPherson. McPherson, and I'm a game operator. I remember being in Cleveland, Ohio. We were busy, it was a Saturday, and this mom comes up, she's probably 2 or 3 years old, this little girl, and she's tugging on my shirt. She says, "Mister, what do I have to do to win that purple unicorn?" And I told her, I said, "Your mom, you gotta make one ball in, 3 for 5, make one." And then she said, "My daughter really needs that purple unicorn." I said, "Ma'am, I'm really busy. What's the deal here?" She said, "She's been diagnosed with a cancer and she's got about 6 months to live." And when she told me that, I stopped. I walked across my game. I pulled that purple unicorn down and gave it to that little girl, and she just started crying. And she looked up and she says, "I love you." And that's what kind of kept me in this business as long as I've been in it. You know what I mean?
You want to think about it?
Well, after watching it out,
change your mind, come back and talk to me. I'm here all day, so.
On a good year, I can make anywhere from 120 to 200,000 a year.
Hey, how about it, ladies? Oh, cut it out. Even you can do this one.
Scott Menge. I've been in the amusement industry 49 years. I'm a past president of Showman's Association. Run carnivals in Miami, Chicago, Indiana, inspected rides in 11 different states. My father started the business with a, in our hometown county fair with a pony ride in 1966. Guy was in a family of five children, all of us helped our parents, and there was another family out there that had eight children, another family had seven children, and we all hung out together. Now it's definitely more business orientated. It used to be a family thing, and now it's not so much. Once it's in your blood, I guess it's hard to get out. I've done things. I had a limousine company, and supper clubs in the wintertime, but every time summer roll around or spring, you'd get that spring fever. I'd take back off on the road, no matter what. No matter what I had going on in the winter, I'd always, spring would come around, go back on the road.
Come on, pretty girl. You can do it right here, right now.
Oh! Oh! Thank you.
Bye, Paul.
Hey, I'm going to see you on TV somewhere doing something. I don't have to toe the corporate line. I don't have to look a certain way. You don't have the 9-to-5 lifestyle. You don't have the corporate masters. You don't have the supervisor standing over your head. This is the last frontier. It's freedom out here.
When we come back, we'll hear about a proposed ballot initiative for medical marijuana. This is Open Spaces. Welcome back to Open Spaces. I'm Aaron Schrank.
And I'm Bob Beck. A Wyoming group has received permission to collect nearly 25,000 signatures by February in an effort to get an initiative on the ballot. It would legalize the use of medical marijuana, among other things. Chris Christian is the executive director of the group Wyoming Normal, and she says it was time legalization became a topic of discussion in Wyoming.
We watched as different states across the country legalized the medical cannabis, and we've been watching California for 10 years to see what would happen in Oregon and Washington. And when Colorado legalized, I was in Denver for 420 in 2013, and that was when we kicked off Wyoming Normal. We were down there to celebrate legalization of the recreational cannabis. And of course, there are a group of us in Wyoming who would like to see recreational in right away. And of course, we're willing to wait because there are people who can benefit from the medical side of cannabis, and we want them to have their medicine as soon as we can get it to them. We'll fight the rest of it out later on when it's time.
The concern you hear from legislators, they talked about it this year, again, as you well know, and some others who have opposed this, maybe most specifically the governor, is this is going to lead to a lot of use, potentially problems on our highways, potentially crime. I'm curious your thoughts on all that.
Well, on our website, www.wyomingnormal.org, if you will click on the link that says, "What about?" We have maybe 20 links there that answer most of the questions we've gotten from people who've written to us, people who've spoken or written in the newspaper, things that we anticipate that people see as problems with it. We've tried to give answers to. The biggest one being, what about the kids? In Colorado and in many, many other states across the country, the statistics are posted there. Drug use among teens has dropped once legalization of any kind occurs there. Specifically in Colorado, the 13 to 18-year-old usage has dropped 5 or 8% since they legalized. The older teens, the usage hasn't changed very much. There's only, though, about 15% of that population of kids that's even tried it, and the survey asks them a specific amount of time, you know, in the last month, in the last 3 months, so forth. And they're not seeing any change. There are no more kids trying it in that age group, and the younger ones aren't trying it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we see this with a 18-year-old alcohol usage that or 21-year-old alcohol usage in states where they legalize your drinking, that once you hit drinking age, most people quit drinking. The challenge is to break the law. And we don't know why kids are oppositional like that, but they are. The one thing that we'd like to tell parents is that it's much better off being packaged properly and labeled, having been lab tested, than what the kids are already getting for themselves on the street. That could be grown with pesticides and insecticides. It could be trash stuff that's not even marijuana they've wasted their money on. The illegal drug deals that get kids in trouble. Take it off the streets and out of the criminals' hands. And the parents will be better off, and so will the kids.
Chris Christian visiting with us from Wyoming Normal. You're going to try and get a ballot initiative, get enough signatures to try and put this on the ballot. Tell folks about what it would say and what you're up to.
Well, basically, we're asking the residents of Wyoming to sign a petition first to get it on the ballot initiative. And the petition is available on the Secretary of State's website, on our Facebook page, and people can read what it says there. But basically, we are asking people to legalize hemp for growing with no penalty. And of course, until the federal government releases us, we have a release that people would have to sign saying they know that the federal government still says it's illegal. Mm-hmm. That will change relatively soon. The second thing that we're doing is putting a bill out before the public that says people who need it for specific medical conditions with the agreement of their doctor, no matter what age they are, if their doctor says they'll benefit from this medicine, then they have the choice to feel better using this than a prescription medication. Now understand, we're not twisting anybody's arm and saying you have to give up your meds and try cannabis. We're simply asking for the opportunity to make the choice ourselves as adults to feel better.
When I was watching a television news program many years ago before Colorado legalized it, I was interested. They were in Boulder, and they had a number of college students talking about smoking medical marijuana and how it was very easy to acquire. I think that is another concern that folks have, is that once you legalize a part of it, it won't be that hard for folks to get. How do we address that and keep that regulated?
Well, through regulated sales and accounting for the sales. Colorado puts chips in the bags. They know whether the bags go out of state or not. You know, there are different ways to regulate it, and we've left that up to a regulatory agency to take care of those regulations with the liquor board. But those concerns that are voiced now will abate when they find out that there are so many other ways to administer cannabis than smoking it. There are the oils, there are the edibles, which they're calling medibles. You can vaporize it. You can use it in one of those e-cigarette vaporizer things. They in Colorado sell the oil that you can smoke. And I intend to, once we legalize it here, quit using tobacco and just smoke the oils. Mm-hmm. I think that I can quit smoking with it. A lot of other people think so too. There are so many benefits and so many other ways to use this. You can eat it as whole plant food. Put it in a salad and eat it. You don't have to smoke it.
So in this, if it goes on the ballot and people support it, it then goes back to the legislature, as I recall. Are you worried that it could go there and never come out?
Oh, yes, of course. This is Wyoming. They sat on the lottery bill for 3 years. We don't. Here is what the law says. They cannot repeal it. The law also says they have to enact it within 90 days. We've given them more time to get the regulations together because we know that it takes longer than 3 months. But they have several other states that they can copy what they've done. It isn't like they're inventing the wheel here. We think that there's a good possibility that the legislature will see how many signatures we have on our petition, and the law says that they can enact something substantially similar.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that, then it won't be on the ballot. But my personal opinion is they should let the people of Wyoming decide.
Chris Christian, she's with Wyoming Normal. A pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us in Open Space.
Thank you so much for having me.
The ability to store energy could revolutionize the way we make and use electricity. But for many utility companies and regular folks, energy storage is still way out of reach. That's because it's expensive, sometimes more expensive than building out old-fashioned infrastructure like power lines and power plants. At what point will that change? Inside Energy's Lee Patterson looks at storage experiments in Wyoming and Colorado for the answer.
For people like Jim and Lynn Schneider, their decision to invest in battery storage came 4 years ago when they moved to central Wyoming.
Well, like right now, you sit and listen, and it's so quiet.
We walk through sagebrush in the backyard. It's ringed by red rocks on one side and wide open prairie on another. They love it. But when the Schneiders bought this land 4 years ago, it was missing one thing.
Electricity. It's like, wow, we're going to have to be really primitive.
That's because the utility company was going to charge them around $80,000 to bring electricity to the property. Installing solar panels and batteries was a little bit cheaper.
This is our battery box.
The system functions, but it's work.
I didn't know there would be as much maintenance to it, you know.
Batteries can also be toxic, and they die.
Which batteries are bad?
I don't know. I'd have to look at the sheet. Mm.
The Schneiders have to replace three of them this summer. With this setup, Jim and Lynn don't have unlimited electricity. They conserve battery power for nighttime use and rely on solar during the day. Lynn was reminded of how unusual that is on a recent trip to visit her daughter in Iowa.
I got up in the morning and go, oh, look, the sun's up. I can have toast. And she goes, Mom, you're in Iowa. You can have toast anytime you want.
The Schneiders' experience illustrates the problems with energy storage, problems that are a big disincentive for large utility companies. Many are choosing to stick with what they know, like overbuilding infrastructure to make sure there's enough electricity to run all of our air conditioners on the hottest day in August. That's according to Brian Warshay, an analyst at Bloomberg New Energy Finance.
The power lines, the substations, the generation equipment all would need to be sized to meet that peak demand, even if it only lasts 1 hour or 2 hours of the year.
For energy storage to provide electricity on those high demand days, the price would have to come down, way down. The Department of Energy predicts that in order for battery storage to become economically viable, costs would need to be cut in more than half from what they are now.
This is Dave Eskelson.
Dave is a spokesperson with Rocky Mountain Power, a utility with customers in Wyoming, Utah, and Idaho. He says when it comes to energy storage, cost is a factor. And then there's this.
Utilities typically use proven technologies. We'll probably wait for a lot of technological development before they're employed in large scale in the utility business.
And energy storage researchers are part of a global race to get to that point.
So this is a product we call the Tesla Powerwall.
There are batteries made by companies like Tesla and AES Energy Storage, as well as people banking away electricity in compressed air, molten salt, in the spinning wheels of a train, and in all sorts of other unexpected spots.
Cheers, cheers.
I met Greg Miller at a brewery in Fort Collins, Colorado.
That is delicious.
That is delicious beer.
But we are not here to talk about beer, exactly. We're here to talk about what's keeping it cold.
I'm the executive vice president of market development for Ice Energy.
Ice Energy makes a product called the Ice Bear.
What the Ice Bear's done is it's stored energy the night before.
In the form of a giant 450-gallon block of ice. During the hottest part of the day,
the ice block's going to actually begin to melt
and cool the brewery's air conditioners and refrigerators, which means those appliances are unplugged from the electric grid for a good part of the day.
Currently, it should be cooling the tasting room as we speak.
Energy storage technology has potential to be the new frontier. But with real barriers in its way, guesstimates put this technology within reach on a large scale sometime between 2020 and 2030. For Inside Energy, I'm Lee Patterson.
Inside Energy is a public media collaboration focused on America's energy issues.
When we come back, more on energy, and we'll take you back to Frontier Days. This is Open Spaces. This is Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck.
And I'm Aaron Schrenk. The massive expansion of domestic oil and gas production over the last 5 or so years is rippling across the economies where that drilling is taking place. Think about it. More oil workers need more welders, more restaurants, and the topic of today's story, more clothes. Inside Energy's reporter Dan Boyce tells us more about the hot new market in flame-resistant clothing.
Will Kessler is a man's man. He spends his days welding.
A lot of grinding. We cut some stuff with torches.
Lifts heavy things. You get the idea. He works for C&H Solutions, a company that builds infrastructure for oil and gas rigs in northern Colorado. Today, though, he's shopping.
Just looking for an FR shirt.
FR. That's the lingo. To some, it means flame resistant. To others, fire retardant.
A Hobbs man has been killed in an oil field accident.
Whatever it is, the federal government now requires this clothing on oil and gas sites everywhere in the country.
Tonight, family members of the three men are struggling to come to terms.
It's actually a pressure explosion in a wellhead.
Data from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics shows 80 people died from fires or explosions on oil and gas operations from 2009 to 2013. That's more than any other private industry. So every little bit of protection helps.
If we're out in the oil field, yes, you're always wearing FRs.
That's Martin Jenkins. He supervises Will Kessler, our FR shirt customer. And Jenkins says he's seen a lot of changes in the FR stuff you can get.
Oh yeah, definitely.
He says 3 or 4 years ago.
You had basically 2 shirts that you could choose from and 1 style of pants, and that was it.
Today, he lets his guys pick out whatever works for them.
We have some jeans, we have hoodies.
Christopher manages the Greeley, Colorado store where Will is shopping.
We have button-ups, we have snap-ups, we have coveralls.
The store is called Frackin' Hot FR. It's a whole shop dedicated to flame-resistant clothes. Demand for this stuff has been surging, and big-time clothing brands around the country are taking notice. Working clothes brand Carhartt out of Michigan is now offering FR. Cinch out of Denver is too.
Everyone is jumping in on it.
Tara Remke works in marketing for California-based Ariat, a brand usually known for cowboy boots and other Western wear. A couple of years ago, the stores selling Ariat products started asking for more FR. Customers were asking for it, and they wanted an upgrade. Remke says typically FRs were stiff and heavy with little thought to fashion.
Nothing about it really makes it a joy to wear.
Ariat developed new garments that still provide protection against fire, but look and feel like their regular jeans and Western shirts. Remke says over the past year, Ariat's FR sales have been 60% higher than what the company forecast. A couple of their FR jeans are now among their top products, and they're releasing a women's line this fall.
And for that to happen within, you know, a little over a 2-year period is pretty incredible.
Back at Frackin' Hot, Will's made his choice.
It's almost like a regular long-sleeve shirt. And
button up with a collar, dark blue, so it doesn't reflect the light from welding into his eyes. It's going to set his company back $55. Kessler thinks that doesn't sound bad at all.
No, not to me.
Heading to the register, he notices something he wasn't expecting.
Is what appears to be some lingerie.
Yeah, you heard right. Lingerie. Manager Dina Christopher says they're a one-stop shop.
A lot of people know us as the FR store that sells lingerie.
Whatever it takes to build a brand. For Inside Energy, I'm Dan Boyce.
When you think of a rodeo star, it's usually a guy on a bucking horse, not a woman. But there is one age-old rodeo event that was developed especially for women, barrel racing. It's been around since the early 1900s, and it's not for weaklings. Racers on horseback make loops as fast and as tight as they can around three barrels set up in a triangle before heading back to the start, and they'll do it all in under 18 seconds. One of the world's fastest barrel racers is 19-year-old Cassidy Cruz from Gillette. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards spent the day with her at the Cheyenne Frontier Days Rodeo.
They call this race a cinch shootout. It's invitation only, and it's Cassidy Cruz's first time.
We all run one run, and then I guess the top four come back for a second run, and then us top four run for $10,000.
Sounds like big money, right? But Cruz has won bigger. In fact, just last weekend in Casper.
I won about $12,500 just last weekend in three runs.
But Cruz doesn't just race in Wyoming. This year, she's raced in 36 rodeos and placed in 28.
Oh, I've been all over from Mississippi to California.
At 19 years old, she's making a living as a rodeo star.
My fastest time I've ever ran on a standard pattern is a 16.8. And that
16 seconds?
16.8, yep.
Wow.
So, and that is like very, very fast.
But Cassidy gives all the credit for that speed to her horse, JJ.
I like him to have like an attitude. My horse does. He has an attitude and he thinks he's the boss of everything, but we also treat him like he's the king, so.
But all that horsey attitude also makes barrel racing pretty dangerous.
I've had my front teeth knocked out before. JJ reared up and hit me in the face and broke my tooth and gave me a black eye.
But JJ isn't here today for the cinch shootout. He's still back in Naples, Idaho, where Cruz raced in another rodeo last night. Today, Cruz is doing something she rarely does. She's borrowing a horse named Ellie from her friend Pamela Nelson. Fact is, things didn't go so well for JJ last night in Idaho. Cruz and her mother, Pam, tell Nelson the whole story.
You probably already know, NAMFA went absolutely terrible.
Really?
I got a no time.
What happened?
I just
didn't cue him for his turn and he didn't take it.
We like hit the fence and then we stopped.
Yikes.
After it happened, Cruz even called her mom and said she wasn't coming to Cheyenne.
I'm like, oh yes you are, I booked airplanes, yeah.
Pam told her to cowgirl up, but right now, that means getting on a strange horse to race in an unknown event. And it starts in only 15 minutes.
Okay, Cass, get your mind cleared out. Be ready, rock star. Don't coast into that barrel. Take her. Okay, I'm done. That's all the lectures you're getting.
Yep. Send her. She'll get really nervous when you put your rubber bands on. So.
And
you,
spurs are good?
Yep, spurs are fine.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Go get him.
Thank you.
Cruz's mom, Pam, and I head to the stands to watch.
Excuse me, honey.
Pam says she feels sick to her stomach. She's worried that the flop in Idaho will shake her daughter's confidence today. But she says her daughter has shown she has what it takes to deal with the extreme highs and lows of this career.
Her dad was a team roper and a bull rider, and she started actually riding horses by herself when she was about three.
After the men's events, it's barrel racing time. Cruz is up first.
Hey, Gillette, Wyoming cowgirl! Somebody help her down the home stretch! And a
17.2 seconds. It's over before I know it. In fact, in a flash of flying hair and horsetails, all eight women race and the whole thing is over. Only one woman beats Cruz's time, but only by 0.13 seconds.
17.07. I'm still happy.
Yes.
Cruz is still in the running for the $10,000. Her mom wipes away tears of relief, and we hurry back to meet her daughter between races.
How did it feel? What did you think?
It's pretty cool. It was exciting. Well, I'm not going to lie. I, I knew she was going to turn, but you think third's in the middle of nowhere. So I grabbed her, and as soon as I grabbed her, and so I did have to, like, pull her back out. I was like, God dang it, she told me not to do that.
So you mentioned earlier that you wanted a horse with attitude. Did she feel like she had?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's definitely the right one. Dude.
Oh, yeah. She has attitude, that's for sure. Yeah.
But there's no time to relax and enjoy the moment or wonder how it would have been different on her own horse, JJ. The final Cinch Shootout race starts in just a few minutes. And tomorrow, it's on to Salt Lake City. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
In the final race of the Cinch Shootout, Cassidy Cruz came in second. She walked away with a $3,000 prize.
Bull riders hold a glamour spot in rodeo. They ride very dangerous animals and even have their own circuit that's televised. But they also require assistance to keep them safe. Those people are known as rodeo clowns or bullfighters. They put their lives on the line to keep the riders from injury or worse. Wyoming Public Radio's Bob Beck met with two of the best and has this report.
You just heard what it sounds like inside the chute during the bull riding event at Cheyenne Frontier Days. But you might not have been able to make out the rodeo announcer thanking bullfighter Daryl Diefenbach for knocking a bull away from a helpless bull rider who had fallen to the ground. It's something Diefenbach and his Frontier Days partner Dusty Tuckness are prepared to do every day. They are veteran bullfighters chosen to work Frontier Days because they are among the best in the world. Part of that is their attitude. Diefenbach had a couple of physical battles with bulls in the last few days, and it's part of the job he's been doing for 25 years, since he first got involved in rodeo in Queensland, Australia.
You fight bulls long enough, get in front of enough bulls, you're going to get run over. And if you're not prepared to get run over, then you're in the wrong profession.
Dusty Tuckness has been doing this since he was 12 years old in Meteetse, Wyoming. He loves what he does and never worries.
You can't panic, you can't get out there and get scared and worried and stuff. I mean, you know, me and Daryl, we're out there, we're calm. You know, our main objective is to save that bull rider at hand, and then after that, when we fall through and roll through, you know, we're going to pick the bulls off each other and get everybody out in good shape. You know, a lot of times it works out good, sometimes we got to take some shots, but again, that's just part of the job.
And there is a strategy to making sure the bull rider doesn't get gored or trampled. It involves anticipating where the rider is going to land.
When that gate opens, you know, we're watching the bull, watching the cowboy, back and forth. And so 9 times out of 10, we can kind of have it in a 6-foot ballpark where that guy's going to hit the ground. And so we want to be able to position ourselves into a spot when he does hit the ground that we can squeeze through there and direct that bull away.
Under the arena where the bull riders hang out, bullfighters are much appreciated. Sage Kimsey is the top money earner this year, and he says bullfighters keep him healthy so that he can compete.
Without them, you know, we'd be banged up even more than we already are. And it's a long road even with them. I would hate to even imagine my job without the bullfighters.
A couple of days ago, Diefenbach and Tuckness got between a very mean bull and rider Artie Meyer. For a moment, Meyer thought the bull was going to hurt him.
He had the option to line me out, and they went in there, and we all got out of there clean, and it was a good example of what them guys do and how much you appreciate what they do.
Do you buy drinks when you see them later?
No, I'll buy them a beer once in a while, I suppose, but I don't have to buy them a beer for them to step in there and save me, so it's a pretty cool deal.
But he probably should for one simple fact. While the bull riders may get fewer injuries, the bullfighters get plenty. Diefenbach has probably put some insurance companies out of business.
Broke my neck, broke my back twice, had to have a shoulder reconstructed, knee surgeries. This is my third eye socket in my right eye, ribs.
Tuckness says injuries, though, are just part of the job. He says you get patched up, rehab, and come back for more. Bullfighting might not be as glamorous as bull riding, but it is absolutely vital to keep the show going. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Bob Beck.
When we come back, we'll take a trip to the so-called Indian Village at Frontier Days and talk about rodeo queens. This is Open Spaces.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. I'm Bob Beck.
And I'm Aaron Schrenk. The very name Frontier Days is meant to conjure up images of the Old West. And that includes Native Americans, who've been a part of Cheyenne Frontier Days pretty much from the beginning. Wyoming Public Radio's Micah Schweitzer visited the Indian village to see where history and contemporary life meet.
Calling all dancers, calling all dancers.
These are the North Bear Singers and Little Sun Drum and Dance Group from the Wind River Indian Reservation. At the center of the Indian village is an arena for the drum and the dancers. It's ringed by vendors selling traditional and not-so-traditional crafts. Beadworker Jim Howlingwolf says visitors want to see traditional items like baskets and rugs, but that's not necessarily what sells best.
That beadwork is still traditional in the way it's done, but the items that I'm beading are more non-traditional. Ninja Turtles, Hello Kitties.
You can see that balance between old and new in the dance circle, too. The dancers wear feathers and moccasins. The drum players and singers are wearing ball caps and sneakers.
My Indian name is Sinan Cedar. I am a member of the Northern Arapaho people. And my name is Sandra Ironcloud. And we are happy to be here to share with you, give you some cultural insight as to our everyday lives and also as what we do as powwow people.
It's a nuance some visitors don't get right away, says Shorty Loudermilk. He's been volunteering at the Indian village for 35 years, and he says some people think Indians are stuck in the 1800s.
Honestly, we actually have people that ask, you know, do they live here all the time? And in the teepees, it's like, no, they have jobs just like the rest of us do.
Sandra Ironcloud says she's had a great time at Frontier Days, but she's also experienced some stereotyping.
You know, you see it a little bit sometimes. Like one time we went to the rodeo grounds and they started, you know, war whooping at us and started saying some started cussing at us, you know, but they were drunk cowboys. What do you expect? You know, see, that's a stereotype right there, too, you know.
Of course, reality is more complicated. Tradition isn't stuck in time. It's more like practices that carry on through time and that can change along the way. For instance, Native American fancy dance, with its quick footwork, took off in the 1950s and 60s in the Southern Plains, which might seem pretty new compared to the 1800s.
There is somewhere between a misunderstanding and a false perception of what Native America really is at this point in history.
Lakota musician Paul LaRush performed at Frontier Days with his band Brulé.
It's not a bad perception. It's just that it's behind. You know, I would say it's probably 50 to 60 years behind where our culture really is today.
LaRush offers a modern American Indian experience with his music by mixing Native drums with synthesizers and electric guitars. And what's now traditional was itself once new, like Sandra Ironcloud's calico dress.
Which is symbolic of the trading days, the late 1800s, you know, when the buffalo, you know, when we were put on reservations.
But a lot of people, because we're in Wyoming, thinks that the Indians and cowboys are still fighting here, and we're not, you know, so, but it's funny.
Volunteer Shorty Loudermilk points out two of the dances quickly dispelled that idea. An honor dance for one of the Cheyenne Frontier Days committees had cowboy hats mingling with feathers in the dance circle. And at the end, the entire audience was invited to join in.
Come join us. This is our friendship dance. This is how we come together as people. We come together as relations, as friends, as family. There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Move them feet. Feel the music. Uh-huh. Looking good, looking good. Loving all them smiles. Here we go! Hey, hey, oh, hey, hey.
John Fernandez was visiting Frontier Days from New Hampshire and joined in the friendship dance.
Part of what makes America America is that we all live together and we can basically harmoniously carry out these traditions and have respect for each other.
And that's a very new idea. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Micah Schweitzer.
Cowboys in Levi's, bucking Broncos, and raging bulls in a dirt arena are probably the images that come to mind when you think of a rodeo. The events aren't exactly known for their glamour, though. But at Cheyenne Frontier Days, two of its most recognizable faces are known, just as much for their outfits as they are for their riding. Wyoming Public Radio's Caroline Ballard finds out what it's like to be Miss Frontier and her lady-in-waiting.
Cheyenne Frontier Days is run almost exclusively by volunteers. Most wear jeans, cowboy boots, and hats, and they blend in with many of the visitors. But there are two you can't miss. They wear giant white leather buckskin outfits with fringe, hats with a beaded tiara, and of course, a sash. They're this year's Miss Frontier.
My name is Sarah Rangich.
And her lady-in-waiting.
My name is Jonna Brown.
As Rangich says, they're kind of the face of the event.
We basically serve as the goodwill ambassadors for Frontier Days, so we travel all year to events throughout Cheyenne and other rodeos and everything like that, school visits, that kind of thing, to promote Frontier Days. And then once Frontier Days is actually here, our job is to just welcome people, just kind of be a friendly face.
And as I understand it, lady-in-waiting, you're sort of learning the ropes, yep. To use a rodeo pun.
Yep. Yeah, as my job as lady-in-waiting is to kind of follow Sarah around, learn everything I can this year, and then in August, after Frontier Days is over, I'll take over as Miss Frontier, and then they'll hold a new lady-in-waiting selection tryout.
For all that, they even get their own parking spaces.
So yeah, so we both get to park our trucks here, which this is, believe me, it's helpful. It doesn't seem like it right now, but parking here gets crazy, so.
Next door, Rangich and Brown have set up camp in an RV by the stables.
Welcome to our home.
My grandparents' fifth wheel, so they live in this for 5 years of the year. Words are getting tied. So we have all my outfits are right there. I don't know if you can tell. It's about 20 shirts and pants probably back there. So we change for all the concerts and everything. I don't even think I have all of my clothes out here yet, if you could believe it. So we have quite a few.
A lot of outfits can mean a lot of time, especially if you're wearing the traditional leather buckskin outfit. It's huge, with multiple layers of shirts, pants, vests, and boots. I asked Jonna Brown how long it takes her to get ready.
Well, I'm really slow, so I take, I don't know, probably 2 hours. Just putting this outfit on takes a good 10, 15 minutes. One time we actually had to rush putting it on at a rodeo, and it was very, it's hard getting all
you
of this.
Really hot, and it's just like, oh my gosh.
The first time I actually put it on, I had it on like all wrong, and Sarah's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, it's my first time putting it on, so it's pretty challenging.
Was it always your dream to be Miss Frontier?
Oh yes, ever since I saw the first Miss Frontier when I was at my very first rodeo, I looked at my brothers and I said, that's going to be me one day. And my brother, after lady-in-waiting tryouts, he's like, wow, you weren't kidding. So it definitely has been a dream.
What kind of a time commitment is it to be a lady-in-waiting and Miss Frontier?
You know, it is quite the time commitment, especially during the summer. You can't really have a job during the summer because we do travel to rodeos and stuff.
This is your job.
Yes, exactly. Throughout the school year, though, we were both full-time students at the University of Wyoming. I had enough time, hopefully, I passed everything. So, but during the school year, it's actually not terrible. It's mostly stuff on the weekends. You know, it's not terrible it's not terrible ever, but it's not that huge of a time commitment until the summer starts.
Once the summer starts.
Early mornings, late nights, the days of the parades we're in every parade. We go to every pancake breakfast. Wednesdays especially a little busy because we have the air show with the USAF Thunderbirds, and it's Cheyenne Day, and it's a huge celebration. We go to all the concerts. That's kind of one of our perks. We get to go to the meet and greets with all the artists and then go to this viewing area, I suppose, like right up on the stage. There are early mornings and late nights, but they're definitely worth it. So we're out there at everything.
We're also out at the rodeo, obviously. In the grand entry, we'll do our flyby every day. So we get to run out of the middle chute and run down the track full speed on our horses, wave into the crowd. So that's something I'm really looking forward to.
That's not all Jonna is looking forward to. Once she's done this year as Lady-in-Waiting, she'll start her reign as Miss Frontier in August.
I'm really excited as Miss Frontier to get a new Lady-in-Waiting that I can start mentoring and hopefully be in charge. So I'm just really looking forward to the 2016 Daddy of them All. Sounds weird saying, but it'll be here before we know it.
For Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Caroline Ballard.
That's our program for today. If you'd like to hear it or individual segments again, you can go to our website at wyomingpublicmedia.org. Anna Rader is our web editor.
You can also find our podcast both on that website, and you can sign up for it on iTunes.
We also encourage comments on our program and good ideas for future shows. We also invite you to follow all of our reporters on Twitter and follow our Wyoming Public Radio News Facebook page and follow Wyoming Public Media on Instagram.
Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.